It started with a coup. It became a revolution. Now, it's the voice of a people demanding to be heard. At Insight Myanmar, we aim to document this unfolding story, one that reflects the resilience, courage, and determination of a nation. Join us as we explore the voices shaping this pivotal moment in history. I'd like to welcome everyone to this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast. We're welcoming Sandar, who for the last several years has been living in Karenni State and doing some really remarkable things there. So Sandar, thank you for joining us on this episode.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. So before that coup, right before that coup, so I was an ethnographer. So I do research, I travel a lot, and I write. And for that purpose, and I learned photography because I'm also interested in visual ethnography like this. Mm-hmm. So I learned photography for 4 months. So when the coup happened, so I could not continue my research works. I could not travel. So the only thing what I can do at the time was photography, taking photograph. So a lot of things are happening in Rangoon. So at the time I'm based in Rangoon. So okay, I have camera, I know how to take photograph. So this is also a way of documenting things. So research writing is also documenting things. So photograph is another way of documenting visually. So the difference is only the medium that I choose. So I took photographs so every day from 8 to 4. So not resting at all. So every single day. So after that, I got getting familiar with the camera and photographs and visual storytelling, and I'm falling into it. So before that, I was not really interested in photography. I just learned it for the purpose of the research. So but afterward, I'm really falling into it. So I joined the mass protest happening around Yangon, in town, outskirt area, and everywhere. So I got a chance to meet with the new resistance leaders, Gen Z, and also the leaders who are doing missions secretly in the urban. So like this, that kinds of things are really unforgettable memories. And also the person that I had known also passed away during that time, and also we ran together and sometimes we were locked and also surrounded by the armed forces, police, something like that. We were locked the whole night, overnight, and sometimes we were almost shocked, and that kinds of things happen a lot. And then, but I keep doing photography. But after, during, starting from April, as far as I noticed, the protests could not be organized in peaceful way. So people do like hit and run. So can only protest like for a short minutes, like 1-2 minutes, like this. So everything's getting more scary. And also, like, the people who were holding the camera were also targeted. And also, and I feel like, okay, this is not the I feel like I found like there is not much things that I can do. Everything's getting in so many limitations to join protests or to take the photographs or these things. So I can't stay like this. So I'm the type of person doing things. So I'm not a stable person. So so and then I had to decide. So what should I do next? So there were more or less and less protests in town, and also people are also fleeing out to different areas of Myanmar for the military trainings, or fleeing outside of the country. So everybody, my friends, they all disappear. Many young people in town were disappeared immediately. So I had to decide around July, August. So I'm at the time, me and others, artists, my friends, we were thinking to flee to Kachin. So we can do a lot of things there, because my background, my research background is really relating with the Kachin area, because I did research, I read trips and a lot in Kachin area. So I'm really familiar with the Kachin people, organizations, and also the land. So me and my friend also with the background of Kachin. So okay, there will be so much thing we can do, and we stay there. So but we have arranged all the trips to flee to Kachin, but my mind has changed. So when I heard that in Karini, the fightings started. The Karini is one of the state who started the M resistance very first and very systematic way. So I'm really interested in Karini. So at that time, and also I have never seen that kind of M fighting and M resistance in my life. So I only heard the stories of the past of 1988. So at the time there was no fighting in Kachin. So Karini started already, and Chin started already. So I decided to go to Karini, not to Kachin. So I went to Karini alone. So I talked to my friend, hey, I'm not joining with you. I'm going to another place. So and I found like I assume like there will be lots of things I can learn in Karini. Or I have no idea that what I should do and what I will do, but I'm quite sure there will be things that I can do and I can manage and I can learn. I flee to Karini, and then I contact to one of my friends who already based in Karini after the coup. So hey, I'm coming. So could you please arrange me something to pick me up in Lycos or something like that, and then please just send me to one of the ITB camps that you know, and I will stay there and I will manage things later by myself. So I will make my own journey later. So the first thing is just pick me up and then send me to one of the ITB camps. So so my friends arranged for that, and then at the time so the fightings also was going on. So I was crossing that areas and fighting zone,
mm-hmm.
and also crossing the Dimoso, a lot of fires, and also many houses were burned down. We were crossing, passing by, something like that. And then after I lived with my friend's residence area for a week, and then after that, I found medic groups. They fled from Yangon, so they are medic students. They are doing the medical service for the ITPs. I decided to live with them. So I requested, hey, can I stay with you all? So because I'm I was ready at the time to learn everything. I have lots of curiosity. So I joined with them. I stayed there, and then I started documenting their medic story. And then during the time while I'm staying with them, I also got other chances to reach out to the different ethnic M groups. I got a chance to be at the one of the Korean Army military training camps. So I stayed there for another 3 months, and I didn't attend the military training. So I request the in charge of the training camp, hey, I want to stay there and I want to document. So there's a lot of things that I can document. So I document every single details, daily training of that Korean Army. So I'm very curious. I got very curiosity in what makes a person to become a Korean soldier. So, what are the factors that make a person, normal person, to become a soldier mentally, physically? So I'm exploring every single details of the training parts. Every day, the whole 3 months. So I document every single training lessons, every single speeches, words, stories, and their environment, their psychology, and their philosophy, and their personal background. I got a chance to know very well about the Korean Revolution history, and also I got a chance to know about the Korean people, and how they had been suffering from that the unstoppable the political deadlock. So, and their family members, some of their family members were murdered, and also some were passed away. Some passed away due to why they fled out from their village. So there's were lots of story. So I also got a chance to meet with the Korean Army's leader and also the public leaders, and I got a chance to interview them about their literature history, political history, and revolutions, and also their personal journey of the revolution over the whole like 70 years, 80 years, something like that. So the time what I spent for 3 months in that military training camps support me a lot, changed me a lot. So it gave me a very complete understanding. It gave me the internet understanding from the internet point of view. So before that, we only got the external point of view to the current people or current people or Gachin people as a Burma people. Mm. But after that, I got a deeper understanding, and also I got lots of internet views. So that helped me a lot to keep staying in Korean and to carry on the things to make the works more effective, efficient, and also, yeah, I feel now I'm getting very rooted in Korean. And in that camp, I also learned the how to write Korean. How to write Kaya language, and also how to speak, and also that kind of thing I also learned. I got the daily diary. I always write down the daily diaries and take the photograph, and I learned their things, how to cook, that kind of thing. So I know how to cook before, but I didn't know how to cook for mass group, like over 400, 500 people with very few limited resources, so inside the jungle. So over 500 people, cooking for over 500 people with only with very limited numbers of the resources, like the only a few dry fish, only with a few chili, something like how to make them for everyone. So that kind of thing I learned a lot. So it is like the reason I choose to flee to Korean alone is like coming from, does it, that decision makes is made based on my based on my curiosity. So it's also telling my personality, I think. So I'm really curious and everything, and also I want to know the things in person. I want to understand the things practically, so not from the other people. So I want to understand that thing by myself. I want to do it by myself. So I want to develop it by myself. That kind of personality I have. So it is like the unknown journey that I want to explore, that I love to explore. And also, that kind of things I used to do before the group, because I travel a lot. I made lots of solo trips by myself to unknown places, meeting with many people that I haven't met before. That kind of things are the thing I used to do. So now, this time, I also do like this. I also behave as I was before. So I keep documenting the photography, and also I'm also really thanks. Sometimes I'm also feel like I'm really thanked to the anthropology disciplinary things, because I learned the anthropology. I left anthropology because I left its approach, its research approach. So that research approach is taking things and making. Trying to understand things from the internet view, taking times, and also trying to understand from internet views, everything invests your life in one place or in one particular things, and you explore deep, that kinds of things. So that kinds of approach and also guide me when I do the photography. So. My photographies are, that's why I became as a documentary photographer. That is not the one that I chose, because I know documentary photographer is the one I like most, not like this. But I choose to do documentary photography is that the practice of doing documentary photography is quite similar to the practice of doing research and anthropology discipline. So I take the long time, I stay with the people, I am trying to understand their emotion, feeling, story, their lives, and then I conceptualize myself how to tell that story, how to present that story. And also, like the, I always love that kind of approach. So I don't like the doing high ground things, or I don't like doing like the superior things, or I don't like any that kinds of things. So I think everything what I decide what to do and how to do is all are linking to the personality, I think. So and also it's also telling who you are. So what kinds of person you are. So it's tell a lot of what are you doing now, and how are you doing, and also like these things, I think.
That's incredible. It's remarkable. There's so many things there, so many threads to pull on and directions to go. I guess the first question I have is, you reference how coming from a Bamar background, you've been interested before the coup and then after as well, and wanting to take solo trips to go to places where you don't know anything, and we're talking about within the borders of Myanmar especially, go to villages that are unknown, that you've never been to or don't know anything about. This kind of interest of a Bamar person that's seeking out non-Bamar communities and non-Bamar, perhaps non-Buddhist practices within the country, is this something that you feel other members of your Bamar community also, you had friends who were doing something similar? Or was this, do you feel like this was quite unique, this interest in wanting to explore non-Bamar communities and the other within Myanmar?
I have no exact answer, but I think but there is a teaching of Buddha. I'm a Buddhist, But I accept any other different kinds of religions. So in Korean, I go to church regularly, that kinds of thing. So, but when I look to Buddha as a philosopher, so one of his teaching is there is a Sutta, Kalama Sutta. So in that thing is the whole conclusion of that Kalama Sutta is accept the things by yourself. So accept the things not by telling others, accept the things not by telling your teachers, not by telling your parents, or not by telling by guru, or not like this. Explore the things by yourself, trying to understand the thing by yourself. Then later you accept it. So and even don't accept the things because Buddha say, don't do that. Explore by yourself. So this is the idea of Kalama Sutta. So since I was young, I really loved that idea. So I always curious to explore the things by myself. So, and also after learning the social science, so I also getting more understanding that philosophy. Okay, there will be different opinions, different perception, looking at one things, but it doesn't problem of having different perceptions. It is the thing how you look, and there will be more than one answer. So having more than one answer is not a problem. So that kinds of thing I also learned from the academia. And also when I touch with the ethnography, anthropology, and I also really fell in love in that discipline because it gave me like the ways, the approach and methods, how to understand, like the way to understand the things in more deeper way and more practical way, so by myself. So that's why I think all these philosophy, all these practice and the teachings from academia also guide me, I think. So we can assume like that there will be people from Burma, they always approach like this. It depends on the person, I think.
Why do you think it's important for people of a majority Bamar background, a majority Buddhist background, to be curious and go into ethnic places and learn their food and their language and their history and their culture? I assume you do think it's important because this is what you do. I'm wondering why you think it's important.
It is important because, you know, our people, especially from the mainland area of Burma, so they have been brainwashed by the central government, central military government over several years. So since the New Wen time, so we all have been brainwashed. Like the ethnic is a kind of the Burma is a kind of superior thing. Ethnic groups are minority and they are less lower than Burma class, something like that. We all need to be united, something like that. That kind of idea we have been and taught, like the union idea, Bilangsu idea. So after having taught of Bilangsu idea, union idea, people may look to the ethnic groups or ethnic M groups. Hey, they are the people, groups of people who are leading for separation, that kinds of us and them, that kinds of division, that kinds of threats, they are threats of splitting the union, something like that. That kinds of thing we have been taught, we have been constructed over years. Like my age is now like 37, so I have been constructing under that kinds of thing over 37 years. So I was born 1988. So we never got a chance to know from the internet side of other people. We only have been trained to look from up or to look from outside. So we never tried to look from inside. So it is really important, I think. So And yeah, and that's why, and also it is also like the understanding others' people is the very basic fundamental of constructing peace, of state building, that kinds of thing. So if you can understand other people, or you can build peace, or you can build peace at all. So this is the very basic fundamental, I think. So yeah, I'm really sick of the that kinds of monopolization, Burma majority, or the Lumuji Wada. I'm really sick of these things, and also I'm really sick of the Union, Myanmar, and Dayenda. I'm really sick of all these things. So Burma also Dayenda, So the whole Union, the structure of our the whole country, the ideology of Myanmar. I don't know how to say that. The construction of the being Myanmar Union ideology. It's really fucking really really rotten, no? So we all need to reconstruct it. So yeah.
Did you have your own biases that you also had to examine along your journey?
So that's why, yeah, I also felt that I always felt guilty of being Burma. But that mistake that I had, these are not my mistakes. That mistake by the our previous generation, and the yeah, but that their mistake give us a burden of guilt. So, like for example, I got a chance to study so peacefully when I was young. So even though the education system is not good, but so far I got a chance to learn peacefully, and no war, no fighting, no displacement, and also after the basic education, I also got a chance to go to higher education inside and also abroad. I got a chance to get scholarship. I got a chance to get the decent job with good pay and also with a decent position, and got that kinds of things. Even though they are come from my own effort, but I can reach to that milestone easily. So if I give enough effort. So, but people from the Nambama area, people who are living in even Nambama area, they not Nambama area, this is a kind of problematic way of expressing the place. The not mainland, not mainland Myanmar area. So they don't have the like if they want to study like the for higher education, so in abroad or some college in Rangoon or something like that, they will have the IT problems, so to travel. So at that point, we are not having an equal chances. So I always feel like living in the mainland, being Burma, so growing up in that community is I always feel like a kind of privilege. So, and also feeling of guilty. So, and so that's why I'm also choose to invest most of my time in the educational initiatives in currently. So I always see like the we have to take advantage of our privilegedness. So we already got lot experiences, work experiences. We already got the academic background. So now please use that kind of thing for the other people who didn't get. So especially in this wartime, it is there's a lot of needs. So for the time, I doesn't need to study more, another more master or another PhD. No, I already got so much things in how I know how to write a paper, how to write a, how to make a research, or I know how to write a proposal. So I already got that kind of knowledge. Please use for others people. So I feel like my the reason of doing my educational initiatives in Karini is also a kind of using effectively my privilegedness, taking advantage from my privilegedness, and also a kind of reducing my guilt. So that's why, yeah. So that's why, no matter what, like the airstrike I got, or we were displacing for several times, like my school has been displacing for several times and have been targeted by airstrike, and we face lots of things. But no, we have to continue, and also I need to apply that I already have as much as I can. So it is also, so I'm always urge other people sometimes, and my voice tone is not, it's really a little bit more like negative, like, hey, use your privilegedness. Mm-hmm. So please take the advantage from your privilegedness. So don't come or do something for the people who are suffering a lot and during this time. Please help a bit. So take your don't stay in the comfort zone of your privilegedness, something like that.
You know, still, it's interesting though, because I think we're going to have some listeners coming from Western countries hearing this and thinking there's some irony in hearing you talk about your privilege, because mm-hmm. you're living in a country that was just taken over several years ago by a terrible military coup, and there's no safety anywhere in the country, and you're choosing to stay in the country with airstrikes and everything else, and you're describing the lack of resources, lack of safety, lack of comfort, airstrikes, danger, violence, et cetera, et cetera. And yet you're still invoking your privilege. And I think for some Western listeners that are in, I think it'd be hard. I think they would have a hard time understanding why you feel a sense of privilege, given the privilege they must feel in listening to, you know, the life you're leading now.
Sure. My friends who are staying abroad, they may also feel guilt. I'm not intending to make them feel bad. So it is the reality, you know. So on ground, we need many human resources who know how to make things happen, and how to write, how to teach, and how to lead. We have that kind of human resources. This is very simple and busy. So
right. So one of the tasks you've been doing as an ethnographer, as looking at anthropology, the tools of academia, and just your own interest in documentation, how much documentation you've been doing, you teased out in the beginning of your talk how you did this deep dive into Karenni, Karenni food, Karenni culture, Karenni church, Karenni history, Karenni, what it means to be a Karenni soldier, the Karenni revolution, et cetera, et cetera. And so we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you a question while you're here with us to share some of this this documentation and learning and insights that you've had into the Karenni society, and we can the Karenni journey, we could even say the Karenni soul. What have you learned in your many years now living in Karenni that you would like to bring to our audience?
Being with them, being with the being together is very important during any kind of revolution. So being together, so we fight together, we stay together, we got as right together, and we stuff together, and we walk together. That kind of togetherness is very important, I see, like the understanding each other, and also building trust, and also that building trust will last long the whole life. Like the, it is very sustainable things I see, and also it is also a kind of the constructing the peace from ground. It is really important being together, so we can understand each other, And also we put the shoes of the other people, you know? We put our feet on the other shoes. So I think this is very basics of success, of bringing success of the revolution or constructing the things positively. And I found like that. And also, of course, sometimes we also suffer the mentally, physically, because of the lack of resources. But there are also lots of people that are facing similar situation like me, because we are together. So by being together, we got our ideology, our way of thinking, and our struggle, our resilience, getting on common ground. So by having that kind of common ground, we can discuss, or we can start a plan, or we can start the idea, or we can continue the things further. I think.
And just your background in documenting and understanding Karenni culture, society, mm-hmm. history, revolution.
Yeah, yeah.
What about this would you like to tell our audience that you've learned?
Please try to understand the revolutionary history of that kind of each groups of people. So in Myanmar history, people they never trying to understand the revolutionary history struggles of the others armed groups, others people, other revolutionary groups. So like for example, we never trying to understand about the past the dynasty of Rakhine, Arakan dynasty. We never learn at school.
Yeah.
And also people, elder people, they never trying to understand the history of the Arakan dynasty. And also we never learn what the Mon dynasty looked like in the past. We never learn in their books at the school. And also in Karenni, there were also the time of Sopia. And also there's a Karenni governors who govern, then they are Karenni land independently. So we never learned that kind of thing at the school history book. Of course, I'm quite sure the older people and also the leaders, they never got a chance to learn about these things. We have to learn that. We need to learn. So that's why people are like the politician, they are hosting the peace talk with a large group of people spending lots of money, but without any knowledge of understanding the purse of the people, of the purse of the groups of people who are sitting on that table.
Uh-huh.
That's the problem.
Uh-huh.
How do they talk? How do they discuss? How do they make dialogue? I'm really, so that's not practical, no? Just wasting the money and time.
Mm. So you've seen examples of top-down, big
mm-hmm.
funding,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
international organizations
mm-hmm.
trying to bring people together to find resolution, but doing that, and in contrast, little work at actually sharing space, hearing stories,
mm-hmm.
getting to know stories and narratives and cultures on a personal level. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. But lacking the knowledge of the understanding the whole history of these groups. So why do they hold the arms? So why do they fight for several years?
Mm.
So why do they ask for their own determination?
Mm.
Why? There's a lot of reason. We need to understand. Just understanding from the above, from the upper level, is not enough.
Mm.
We need to understand very deeply from the other side, from the internal side
mm-hmm.
of that group. So I think. So I'm quite sure that like over 3 years of spending in Karenni, that experiences gave me. So I will not. I'm quite sure that I will not be the negative person society in the future anymore. By handling all that kinds of things, or when I face that kinds of the things.
Mm-hmm.
So because I got a chance to understand the people in their side. So that I think that is really important, I think.
And how would you explain their side? How would you explain with this, the years of really embedding in their society and learning internally, as you say, how they see the world? How would you describe that perspective and that view?
Like, for example, they we need to understand their roots. Their roots. So there's a they belong to their lands. There's a lot of factors that make them belong to their lands, and also we need to feel all these factors, and we need to understand all these factors. So then we will understand it, I think. So some are like the intangible things are intangible, tangible. A lot of things are constructing and mixing up. So not only one thing, two things, three things, so all are mixing up. So there's a lot of things that make them belong to their land and that make them to love each other, to love their people. There's a lot of things that construct people as a Karenni community or as a Kaya community or as a Kayan community. There's a lot of things we have to look carefully. So, yeah. So understanding means that kinds of things. So just only reading the history of Karenni, 200 page of Karenni history book, it's not like that. Understanding means. So just reading a book is not enough. Like trying to understand that kinds of seeing and unseen things. That is important, I think.
And so, you also spent time in Kachin State before the coup and got to know quite a bit about Kachin culture, history, people. You've spent time, very interesting to ask you, because as a Bamar, you spent extended time in Kachin and extended time in Karenni. And so if you were to contrast Karenni and Kachin, how would you distinguish kind of the differences of these people and their history and their culture? What would stand out?
Yeah, I cannot identify that kinds of separate things at one part of the conversation. So no, I don't know how to express it. So there will be lots of things similar, different. So I only haven't been to Kachin. I also have been to several places around country. So since I was young, like since I was a teenager, so like 18 years, 19 years old, I travel around the country, and also me and other friends, we started the youth initiatives around the country. So we started forming the youth networks in every state and regions. And also since I was young, I got a chance to get in touch with the different ethnic, cultural, historical background. So that also bring me reaching at some point of here. So, So my whole life experience getting old, trying to understand others is really important, really important.
Right, so you've had experiences understanding other minority communities throughout Myanmar, many different communities in many places. If you were to characterize some of your experience in those different regions, what would come to mind in describing the unique cultures of the different communities?
I like the, how should I say it? From my perspective, like, of course, there's the distinguished things, but things are not always the constant, no? Things keep changing. Yeah. And also the construction, reconstruction in the society, things in the societies are not constant, so they keep changing. So it will be hard to distinguish. This is the distinguishedness of Kachin. This is the distant things of Karenni. It will be hard to identify that.
Sure.
So the unseen things like that. So I only see the things. What are the factors that construct that things at that point? So I only look at the things that way. So. It's quite hard to answer. In that currently, like the nationalism, is really their positive, their strength of gathering all together, and also fighting back all together. So this is their positive, their strength, I see. And also they know how to give a space to their young leaders. So this is really important. So the young people, they take the risk. They take the risk. They are the risk taker, than the older generation. And also they are not the how shall I say? They are not the rigid people. They have not been constructed by one ideology or one things of the past that haven't succeeded. They were not like this. They are risk taker and they have the clear vision, and they have that these are the things I really love the young people. So this is also another strength of that of the current revolution, I think. As I said, togetherness, they know how to make a collective leadership, and also how to gather people, several groups from different backgrounds in a united way and fiber. And also they also know what to prioritize first. And there are also a lot of complicated things and soft political things in currently. But the point is they know what to put the priority, what to prioritize first. Okay, that thing need to prioritize, that thing is sensitive and politically and so for several years. Okay, let's put them a little bit later. That kind of thing. It is important, I think.
Very pragmatic.
Yeah. So this is that I noticed so far.
You mentioned how you also saw the military training that they were undergoing. You got permission to observe their full training. So and you documented that as well. What did you learn from that?
I just look at the what made a person becoming a soldier. So, constructing a person. So, it is not just for the becoming a soldier. It's not only about the physical training things. It's also about the mental things, psychological things, and also the social things, and also cultural things and historical things. This is the things I learned. Like people may think, okay, if you want to become a soldier, just go to a training camp, then you become a soldier. Of course, definitely you will become a soldier with a uniform, a soldier with a uniform. But becoming a real currently soldier, like this, they call Kayalipe. What made the soldier currently soldier? This is the point I'm really interested in. What are the things that construct them? So that's why I look at their slogans. I look at their national anthems, and also I look at their daily training routines, and their social activities, and also their military lesson, and also their other extra lessons, and all these, and also the procedure on how the church manage and they operate the whole training camps, all these things, and also it's also related to the historical, also related to the personal stories of that the trainees. And also, it's also related to the personal story of the person who are the teachers of the training camp, who are the in charge of the training camps. So everything are really important, becoming a soldier. So just training is not enough. When I noticed the military training, okay, I'm got a lens like, is this only for physical training or what are the other things that made that construct becoming a soldier, not just physical things. So this is the things I learned most. So I think military training only with physical thing will not be enough.
And so you come from a background very far away from military training and conflict. And so for you personally to be involved in observing the nature of the military training, the mindset, the role of arms within a society, was that something that took you some getting used to, or was it strange for you to adjust?
It is quite, yeah, it of course it is this, it is a very new thing for me, so I need to adjust things a lot. So I also joined the morning exercise, morning physical training, not the whole the training things like the, and then I spend social times with them, and yeah, and also I learned their things like language, food, all these that kinds of things also I did. Yeah, these are the I need to adjust, and also I also need to adjust my identity. So like at first sight, I say, hey, where is your ethnic? I'm Burma. They all got shocked. So I need to adjust that gap. So, but for adjusting that gap, it doesn't need to hide my identity.
How did
So
you
it
adjust
is
it?
a, I learn about them. This is the best way, adjusting it. So sometimes people, they don't know how to adjust. Not saying like that. So people, they had to, they got a situation, that kind of similar thing to adjust. So at the time, they blame other. That is not the right way. So they look at me like that. They treat me like that. So the people react like this. This is not a good way of adjusting that kind of gap. And also sometimes people, they hide their identity. Oh, no, I'm not that person, or I'm not that ethnic, but something like that. It's also not a right way. So this is not a healthy way. And so need to be honest, and at the same time, need to understand other why they look at you like that, why they talk to you like that, why they treat. There may be a lot of reason behind trying to understand it. So by trying to understand it, that gap's getting narrower and narrower, and then you can find that gap. Become you be, will become together. You will feel, you will start feeling togetherness. So okay, we are same. So that kinds of things. So and then they will also look at you. Hey, you are, oh, she is a Burma, but it is not an issue anymore. At first sight, it may be an issue, but later it is not an issue anymore. So this is my lesson, the adjusting the gap. But outside world, like people, like in this during this revolution, there's a lot of people who are fleeing from different areas where they are really strange to that. So I think people, they may face a lot of problems or difficulty adjusting that kinds of things. So I may suggest, first, don't hide, don't lie, trying to understand others, trying to understand the reason of why they look at you, why they treat you, and then that gap will get narrower.
Right. So
So.
you've described on one hand the challenge of Bamar who have more of a superior, arrogant attitude that aren't interacting with the ethnics. And then on the other hand, you've described the problem of large international funding programs that are trying to do top-down approaches to bring different leaders together to, workshop a bit too fast into solutions before they understand each other. What you're describing is really a middle way. It's really a practice of grassroots human connection, sharing stories, sharing bread, sharing rice, sharing space, and learning about each other. Do you feel that what you're experiencing now that it's somewhat unique to you, or do you see more and more examples of this kind of inter-ethnic solidarity and other people like you that are coming from, we could say, privileged backgrounds as you are, that are also making efforts in this post-coup era to try to understand and reach out and learn about mm-hmm. the history of some of these groups. So mm-hmm. do you see other examples of people doing what you're doing now that gives you hope?
Yeah, I think here during this revolution, I found a lot of examples, like the people from another area, mm-hmm. flee to another area that they are not familiar at all. Mm. And then, but they give lots of the efforts, service as much as that person can. Like the doctors or nurses or the teachers, or we found that kind of story a lot during this revolution, the whole country. So in Karenni, we also have many people who are coming from outside, from different areas, so like from Rakhine, from Shan, from Burma mainland, that kind, from Karen, that kinds of thing. These are very good examples of that revolution. We didn't have that kinds of example, that kinds of good things before. So that kinds of we got that kinds of connections. This is the advantage from that revolution, I think.
Right.
And this is also very practical, pragmatic, constructing and the different society. So in the past, you know, the building the trust or building the unity is like sure hosting the ethnic fair, so how should I say, concert or the that kinds of thing, just the kinds of manipulation, but they right. are not practical. So these no. are not these are the things that we don't need.
Right.
So what we really need is that kinds of the practical pragmatic. Actions that we all have been doing so far during this revolution.
One concern that's come up is that some ethnic groups or ethnic leaders have seen the coup and the revolution as, oh, this is just another example of Bamar fighting Bamar. It's not really our cause to get involved, that they're, whether this Bamar group wins or that Bamar group wins, one will be slightly nicer to us, but there's not really this history of whichever form of central government exists, that there's not really a history that they trust, that they're actually going to look after our rights and understand our history. And so that's been a reason why some ethnic groups have been a bit hesitant to want to join the revolution, mm-hmm. and that's also why there's been some thought out there that there's some ethnic mm-hmm. groups that don't really want democracy. Democracy, mm-hmm. how is that going to benefit them? It's more mm-hmm. they want the survival and the safety and the prosperity of their community. That's mm-hmm. what they want. And so then you get into a question of to what degree are some of these ethnic groups seeing that democracy is the best way to achieve that, a federal democracy where that's inclusive and where there's a charter that protects the rights of all, and mm-hmm. that is the best way to mm-hmm. be able to get to have their own community looked after instead of all these fragments and balkanization. Mm-hmm. But then another way that's been posited is that mm-hmm. And even sometimes when you give democracy to certain states, mm-hmm. people vote on things that don't lead to very liberal outcomes, mm-hmm. and so another argument that's that we've seen in the last few years is that some of these groups they don't really want democracy. They are not happy with the military, but they also don't necessarily want to be in a federal unit where it's another fear of a Bamar group that is even if it's a different form of governance that's dominating them or harming their community and their land in another way. And so I know that you've been more based in Karenni, but and Karenni is, as I've heard, a much more positive example of some of the developments that are happening there. But to what degree have you seen in Karenni, as well as these other ethnic territories, how much there is a buy-in this time to really believe differently in what's happening now than what came before? And to what degree are you seeing ethnic groups and leaders that are just kind of seeing this as inter-Bamar conflict that doesn't really suit them to be involved beyond just wanting to secure the safety of their community and their land?
I noticed that, as far as I noticed, they are not seeing, like, this is not the Bamar conflict anymore. Mm. So this is their the I'm racist and I'm, this is the I'm revolution. So we all are accepting that. And then I also noticed that these leaders, they also recognize, hey, Burma community also getting suffering a lot this time, that they already suffer in the past, like they had suffered in the past.
Mm.
So I think they are not seeing anymore. This is a Burma conflict. No.
You're talking about Karenni.
Yeah, I'm talking about Karenni.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they are very they are more wider, wider, and I don't know. So this is not the problem. But they look at this is the M revolution fighting everyone, the whole country to the military. So yeah.
Now you also mentioned your discovery into Karenni food and Karenni cooking. So tell us a bit about Karenni cuisine.
So now in Karenni, now I forgot. Now I really cook Burmese food, Burmese way of cooking while I'm seeing Karenni. I really like the Karenni pepper. We call makati. So I really like it so much. Whatever I cook, the way I cook is really like Gaya Wiro cooking style.
How is Karenni cooking different than Burmar cooking?
Like, in Karenni, like there are also different ways of cooking that are different from one ethnic group to another ethnic groups. So I'm used to be familiar with the Kaya ethnic community. So the practice in Kaya ethnic community are the things that I'm familiar with now, and yeah, we use very less white, and we put that kinds of Kaya pepper. And also we use lots of veggies, and also at the same time we also eat lots of meat, and like the whole pig or the whole cow or the whole chicken, that kinds of thing. And and also I also love eating the, how should I say, wild animals. That's environmentalist, you know, like, but as a person, people who have been living inside the jungle, so we sometimes we had to eat that kinds of the animals, like the monkey and the squirrel, and also sometimes snake. And
how do those wild animals taste?
I like it.
Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah.
And so when I joined the front line with the soldier, I got a chance to eat that kinds of things. But when I stay in the village, so we rarely eat. We only eat normal food like veggies and chicken or pork, something like that. But in the front line, or when we are in the jungle, so we got a chance to try that kinds of things.
What's it like living in the jungle?
How should I say? Like people they assume, like, normally when we talk about the jungle, like people they may assume like doko, we call doko, getting into the liberated zone, that is jungle, like this thing. It will be completely remote, or the people they may look at, I like the no health service, or everything's are deteriorating, the people may look at. They have that kind of image,
right,
1988 or something
right.
like that. But in the liberation zone, like the jungle, villages, town, we all have that kinds of the connections. Not jungle is separate, the villages are separate, not like this. We all have that kinds of connection in and out. This and this. So not living completely inside the jungle for the whole 3 years, not like that. And also sometimes we are in the jungle, sometimes we are in town, sometimes we are in the village, sometimes we are crossing through all these area. This is the way we are living. So, but when people, the image in the head of the people from outside, people who used to, who are living outside there. We got toku, holding the arms or being in liberation zone inside the jungle is look like the every nothing, only the trees.
Right.
And all the tent with a plastic shelter tent and water, no enough water, no electricity, they may think like that. Of course, we also have that kind of situation, but not all the time. We are having, that kind of thing. So,
so what's it actually like in the jungle then? What's the real experience?
How should I say? It is. I'm really like the quiet places. So I'm the one. I also like the staying. I also like the having quiet time and also being alone sometimes. I also like that.
Do you meditate in the jungle?
Yeah.
What kind of meditation do you do?
So at my school, since I started my school, the whole 3 years round, I put the meditation as a psychosocial support activities. So there's a lot of psychosocial support activities, but meditation is not the way of religious Buddhism things.
Right.
So it's more social things like meditating. Sometimes we hug the tree, sometimes we walk to the jungle, we walk to the stream, or sometimes we do a slow walk, or sometimes we do very basic yoga, or sometimes we write the, we got the silent times, and then we write the haiku poem. This is also kinds of meditation, writing haiku poem. There's several ways of practicing the meditation we did.
So tell us about the school that you started.
So after living in the at the military training camp, so when that military training camp was finished, so I keep staying in a village nearby that training camp, and then at that time the whole area was unsettled, so the fightings fighting raced. So and then I stay at a village, as a small village, only 6 households there. So 2 households with several kids, and the rest are household are only grandma, grandpa live. So I had no idea where to proceed. So and then people are moving around, people are displacing. So crossing that village, and then the villagers in that village, they also told me, like, if you teach my student, my children, we are not displacing, we are not moving. So that's why they also don't want to leave their village, but everybody are moving. So they are also intending to move around, to another place. But they request me that if you teach my kids, we don't move. So I start teaching the little kids, little children, like a kindergarten and the age. So there is no books, there is no board. I only have one marker pen. So I use the poles of the fence of the village as a board of writing, for writing. So like the 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, there's a fence pole. So we write on the fence, 1, 2, 3, 4. That kinds of techniques I use. And also I also use the creative things, like picking the flowers in different colors and then teaching the colors with the flowers. And also the teaching the numbers with the animals, like counting the chicken or counting the dogs or something like that. I use that kinds of creative things to teach that children. and then after the fightings were settled at the time, I got the connection, internet connection with my friends. So they contacted me, hey, please come back from the hill, and we are opening the school at the IDB camps area. So we need an in charge. So we haven't prepared any curriculums or anything. We only have students. So come down from the hill. So I come down to my friend's IDPCAM area. And then since that time, I started that school inside the jungle. So in that, when we start the school, no books, no library, and no curriculum, and only we have the bamboo tent and the 54 students and two teachers, me. So I designed the curriculum, teaching curriculums and teaching method from creative alternative way. And so we have the forest. So forest, if we have the forest or tree, we can teach people. So so I had the experience as an intern at the homeschool, forest school in Thailand and in Netherlands. And also I'm also the alumni of the Gaia Education UK Thailand. So I know the alternative teaching methods. So I realized that, okay, alternative way of teaching approaches are the best way to handle the to provide the education service under the limited resources situation. And also I learned about citizen science. I'm also from the science background, so I know very basic techniques and lessons of teaching science. How to teach science very basic level using the forest and lands and surrounding area. So I developed that kind of curriculum, teaching practice, and then we start school. Yeah. First we teach them like English, mother tongue language, and also I also teach them basic science and the environment, and also the psychosocial support. With the teenager, INTP teenager, they need lots of psychological support. So I invested a lot for that. And and also for the food safety and sufficiency. So we teach the organic farming techniques and also nature farming, like permaculture, making the organic fertilizer, bokashi, that kind of thing. So I designed the subject that are essential for the young people at the time. And so I named my school as an alternative school, alternative forest school. And then we can only provide short course for 3 month rounds. So and then after 1 year, me and my friends, we start thinking like, hey, we need to do next. So just providing short course is not enough. So there are also lots of teenagers who needs to learn the higher education. So at the time in 2023, there is no higher education institutions in Karini at all at the time. So in 2022 and late 2023 and 2024, we are having more higher education institution in Karini now. So at the time when we started our school, there is no higher education institution. So in 2023, we started the higher education programs. So I decided to focus on the social science area, social research area. I feel like this is interdisciplinary academia and also very practical and very useful for that kind of political social cultural situation in Karini. So we started the higher education program that we call Diploma in Social Study, 1 year program from 2023 to 2024. So that one already graduated recently. And then we are studying another batch from 2024-26 batch of academic year of Diploma in Social Study. So we only prioritize the adolescent youths who are IDPs and who are willing to learn the higher education programs and also interested in social science area. So we only targeted that kinds of young people from different areas of Karini. And I make sure my school is the learning environment with the diverse community. So with diverse background. So the like admission process and also the learning environment, everything I make sure that is inclusive learning environment. I make sure my school is the inclusive learning environment, no matter ethnicity or religions or class or anything.
It's amazing that you have the time to do everything that you're doing.
And also I make sure we provide the mother tongue languages. Like now my school is very first school who is providing more like 4 mother tongue languages. Mm-hmm. So I'm also planning to extend to provide more mother tongue languages. So mm-hmm. students, they got a chance to choose their own mother tongue language. Mm-hmm. So if the student is Kaya, they can learn Kaya. If the student is Koyo, they can learn Koyo. Something like that. I make sure that kinds of the rights, educational rights. So, my ideas of the inclusiveness, being together, understanding others, these are really essential, not only in the educational environment and also in everything, in every context, I feel.
But you say that your school has been displaced a number mm-hmm. of times?
Yeah.
How is that?
We started this one. So we at that time, we target all IDP children, IDP adolescent. This is the library we developed. So after 1 year, so we got a really good library with lots of books.
Wow, in the jungle.
Yeah, inside the jungle. At the time, to receive the packages, so I need to wait like 2 months or 3 months, or sometimes fall and sometimes I lost. So they were lost.
And how did you get funding for this?
No, and so to the person, we don't receive any, we are not relying on the project funding. Mm-hmm. So we only rely on the individual voluntary supporters.
And how did you find individual donors?
Like my friends, my friends abroad, who are living abroad or inside, and also some my teachers, my senior co-workers before, and also they contribute their money. And also sometimes we receive the small grant, like $3,000 or $2,000, that kinds of things. We never receive the educational big project. So we apply, but we don't receive because I think the donors, they assume like that we are not the established education institute. We started during this revolution and in the war zone, we based in war zone, researching.
That's all the more reason to support.
Yeah, and several times. So the funding, the effectiveness of the funding will not be guaranteed. Something like that. They may have that kind of concern.
But you say that your school was displaced several times.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
How was that?
So it's like... This one is the old school area. So the fightings, fighting, getting close to our school area, and also the whole region, the whole area. At that time, the whole area were displaced, over 35,000 people in that region were displaced immediately in 2023 March. So my school area also displaced, and then later on my school area, the area around my school got the airstrike, so we cannot go back and we cannot use that place again. So we need to resettle in different place, another area.
The school was hit by the airstrike?
No, not hit, but the IDP camps were hit by the airstrike, and one man dead.
Were you there when the airstrikes happened?
No, we were not. We already displaced. Mm-hmm. So like it happened like a month later. Mm-hmm. So, and then we trying to find another place and we relocate there. We teach for, in that place we teach for 3 months and then we look for another place. And then we build the school as like a can not to be look like as a school. Mm. And then we teach there for 9 months again. And then, but airstrike, like the fighter jet are always crossing, drones are always crossing above our area. Mm. And also the learning environment was not good at that area.
Right.
So that's why we decided to replace again another place. Mm. And then now find a place we are settled over a year. Mm. And then we, yeah, and also we build the buildings and we build the underground cave in a very strong way. So mm.
Yeah. What's the effect that you've seen on the children to have to go through so much displacement and conflict and mm-hmm. violence? That must be just tremendously hard for a young person to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So they are, they got lots of stress. They got lots of stress. They got trauma. And also, at the same time, they have stress because if that person is their eldest son or eldest daughter, he or she has the responsibility to take care of the family. Mm-hmm. So, but she has to, or he has to study. So there is a dilemma in that person. So that student got lots of stress. Mm-hmm. Sometimes their family members pass away, their brothers joined the army and then pass away, or they got injury. That kinds of things they are facing every day. So, and also my student, we host all students at school, like a boarding school. Mm-hmm. So they miss their home, they miss their family. Mm. Their families are living very far apart from their area. There is very rarely chance to visit their families, that kind of thing. And also sometimes some people, they lost the connection with their parents, with their family. Mm. When their area of their parents and got the airstrike or anything, that kind of thing. So just teaching the lesson, just providing the education, teaching the subjects, this is not enough doing education in the world also. So the effectiveness of learning need to go along with the psychosocial supports. So, mm-hmm.
And it must be really challenging mm-hmm. for the community to keep their morale, because mm-hmm. the morale is so important. The morale is what's going to kind of put you through to the belief that you're going to make it, and you have a positivity and an optimism in the community. And to be facing so much violence and airstrikes mm-hmm. And displacement and everything else, it must really be a challenge, I would imagine, to maintain the community morale.
Like the we all already lost everything. Mm-hmm. So we all already lost everything. We all don't left anything. Everything already got destroyed. So this is the situation we embrace. Mm. So everybody embraced that situation. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that is also a kind of resilience. This is the situation we had to face. We had to embrace. Mm. So this is that the things we are keep going. Mm. So mm-hmm. I'm also like, My school already displacing from several times, mm-hmm. and then I'm see like, oh, this is the situation that I had to face in a war zone. Mm-hmm. This is the situation that I have to embrace. That's it. So I need to continue. And also, like me, also others, INTP families, others groups, they also like, oh, this is the things we have to face. This is our real situation. Okay. We got destroyed, Start again, continue. God is right, start again, continue. This is the situation we are embracing.
And so, so as you're embracing that, you know, there's also these things aren't just happening. There's a very, very bad actor who's doing these things intentionally. You know, the Burmese military, the Burmese military is wanting to kill vulnerable people and scare them and make them submit and fear children, elderly, churches, schools, monasteries, etc. And so, you know, as you're trying to keep up the good morale and the belief and the resilience, where, what place does anger have in that? You know, anger towards the Burmese military, fury towards the military, that this is a bad actor with agency who's doing this intentionally to us.
Yeah, we already understood that. We already understood this is the way the military do. The gender military do. So we already understood. We already face it. Like the since the very long time ago, so they know the nature of the gender military, and then of course at the very first experience after the coup, we all got angry or we all blame or something like that. After facing that kinds of sad things again and again and again, this is the thing we had to face. There is no alternative way to keep it away from us. This is the way we had to face. That's all. So, So that kinds of resilience, that kinds of that kinds of embracing, is also fighting against the military.
Sure.
If we cannot have that kinds of resilience, if we cannot embrace, we will run away. We will run away, for sure.
Yeah.
As far as we embrace, we can resist, we can keep our resistance. But if we abstain or if we run away from that, we cannot fight against the military. So that kinds of embracing things, sad things, are also fighting against the military.
It seems there's such a careful balance you have to have, because on one hand, you have to know what your direction is and what you're willing to do and what your objective is, and there's a reason why you have that objective. But yet the military wants you to turn into the dark side. It wants you to turn into the dark side of fear or anger or hopelessness or despair. And so it seems that you have to have this balance of knowing what that objective is and maintaining that objective and not suppressing, allowing those natural feelings to come, but not being overcome by anger or being overcome by fear, because you know those emotions can have a role in your development and your response at a time, but getting swallowed up by any of those emotions, and you're not going to be able to reach your objective.
Sure.
So that's a lot of maturity, really, and having to handle all that, and handle that not just for months or for years, but for generation in the case of some of these ethnic groups.
So this is also the thing I noticed, that resilience is really, how shall I say, just only one word, no? There's a lot of things we have to embrace. So, and also that is really important. The most very crucial things, and like to go through that revolution. So, yeah. So that's why I'm also being aware of being mentally and physically strongness. That is important. So to go through that revolution.
So then, when you found yourself in conflict, or when conflict has found you through whatever means the violence comes, you don't have any background in being in conflict zones or war zones. And so, how have you learned? You don't have any training or background in this. So how did you learn how to respond? You know, the natural feelings of fear, of shock, of terror. What did you go through as you found yourself in some of these conflict zones, and how did you grow?
So, like my very first chance, being in the military training camps when I first arrived to Korea, it's helped me a lot. So, even though I didn't join as a trainee, but I got familiar. So I got a chance knowing the some of the military lesson in terms of the safety and security measurements, and also the in the military things like security, the is very important. So I'm getting aware of that things, and also how to hold the information not to leak, and also how to be stable in a very, very unstable conditions, that kinds of thing. And also the a little bit basic training things, like how to roll on the ground, and also the where the how to what is the sounds of the fighter jet and normal air flight, or what is the sound of the bullets, and also the motors, that kinds of thing. And then I also got a practice like how to walk at night without lights, and that kinds of thing. These are very basic essential things, and also how to keep the messages, that kinds of thing. These are the very important, very crucial. And and yeah, but when I joined the front line, so I'm not the press media. So that's why I make clear myself my role. When I take the photograph, when I join the front line, okay, I'm a documentary photographer. The first thing is I need to make sure the security of all people that I'm with together. So not to harm them, others, not to harm others. That is the most important thing. I'm really aware of that. And also, I'm a documentary, but that's why first I need to understand the context, and I need to understand about that battle zone. So I'm trying to, first I always trying to understand the whole context when I join the front line. And then I also decide to join the front line where I'm familiar with. So if that front line is very, very new place that I don't know before, that I have no idea where it is, or who are the peoples. So I rarely choose to join that kinds of area. So and I'm trying with the teams, KNDF team, and that I used to go with them. So I know they are the way they walk, and also this is also one of the safety measurement cautious thing that I make myself. And also like that when I arrive to one place, I'm trying to get in touch with the people in that place, and also I'm trying to learn that area, that place where it is, and also where it's not salt wet, and also where are the streams, where are the mountains, where are the roads, something like that. And then at the same time, I got already trust, and I made the trust people who I need to work with. And also the KNDF team, that team I used to join, is I already knew the people, soldiers are in that team. So it is also quite okay moving around, going with them, joining to the front line, to the fire zone or danger zone or that kind of thing. So I also got friends from the rescue team, from the medic teams. These are also the things that make me sure, okay, where to be safe. So I had to consider a lot of things, not only on getting photographed. So I need to make sure not to harm others, and also to be safe myself.
And so all of that being done, what have you then gone on to document and see on front lines?
So at the front line, for the front line documentations, and I cannot catch up everything, so I accept it. So I need to make sure, oh, so now you will not catch up everything. So that's why I got the different tools, different mediums, like the writings, my daily diary. Another tool is the sometimes audio recording, video recording, and another tool is the photograph. So sometimes I combine, I practice different tools and different for different purpose and for different cases. So and then I had a chance to combine all these things.
Mm.
So like for example, so when I mix out that photograph, oh, I missed that one to take photograph. Okay, it's okay. I can write, or I can write, or I can record the audio or something like that. I need to open the window for other options. So if only focusing on photo, oh, I want to take this. I'm really angry myself because I missed that. Next time I will try that. So that it doesn't need to be rigid like that. So it could harm others, or it could harm the whole operation, or it could harm others' mechanism. So I need to be flexible. I need to open the windows for other options. I need to have the backup plans, and also I need to stay calm down, and also making myself sure, okay, I'm trying as much as I can, like these things.
Right, and yeah. Now you've also done a lot of work on airstrikes and documented airstrikes, and you've done some exhibits, Indivisible, based on the work you've done. So tell us about how you came to document airstrikes and the experience of the terrifying experience of when airstrikes are coming on civilian communities. And what about this project and this exhibit that you put together?
Yeah, this is the story of the medic thing that I'm stay when I first arrived to Karenni. So I have been documenting them for 2 years. Of course, at the beginning, I stayed with them over 2 months. And then later on, I'm not staying the whole 2 years with them. So I'm also have my own plans moving around. But I got keep in touch with them. I frequently visit there and took them. And also I make sure myself not to mix out the special occasions, special activities. So for that kinds of special things, I make sure to visit them and take the photograph. So I can say that combining all together, I'm documenting like nearly 2 years. And then at the time, I'm also don't know where to stop my documentation because things are keeping on. So this is also the one of the difficulties that documentary photographer used to face. And then where to stop it? And also, I also lost in that photo. Okay, no problem. I will take photographing them as much as I can. And then one day, there was a fighting. That fighting is getting close to the village where we based before, and then. Very, very, very intense in the fighting. So I could not join the front line danger zone, fire zone, because very, very intense on that day. So I decided, okay, I'm not joining the fire zone. I joined with the medic thing. So I joined to the hospital. Okay, I go to their hospital, and I will document the whole day activities during that intense fighting day. So for that intention, I decided to go to the hospital instead of going to the front line. In the next morning, early morning at 6, the fighter jet, they got the location of that hospital. Because last night there were lots of injuries, the cars in and out from that area. Because so the drones, they noticed that location, they got that location, and next early morning, they boom us our area, the hospital. So at the time, I'm still under the in the sleeping area of the bamboo. So, and then the the fighter jet boom us for 3 times. So, the two buildings during in the hospital compound were destroyed.
Oh boy!
And
must
also,
have been terrifying.
Yeah, one got injury, and then, and we were. I'm really scared. It was my very first time getting the strike directly to targeting my place, and then the hospital. So people, the whole hospital, they decided, okay, we need to move immediately. So all the whole team, the hospital was shut down. That area was shut down. And then that team moved to another place, and then they decided to stay hospital in another place. So I thought that, okay, this is the point I can stop. At the time before that airstrike happened, so everything's keep going. So if I present that story, there will be there will be in danger for security reason. So people, the others, they will get know. Oh, there will be there is a medical team and there is a hospital, something like that. I don't want let people know about their activities. They also don't want they also don't want to be published for the security reason. But after that airstrike, they said, Masanda Sana, you can release it now. So we all are studying again in another area and another so from the beginning to that part, you can release it. It should be, and also it is also time to be published, because how to let everybody know how the medic teams are facing severely providing the medical service in the front line, and also how the gender military target to the civilians and the medical institutions in war. This is war crime. So I thought that this is the right time to publish it. So I did it.
So you then made an exhibit, several exhibits in Thailand, right?
In Chiang Mai, in Mesot, and also the media's cover, and also others. There's a several organization contact me, and they would like to know about the airstrike and also the medical health situation on ground. That kinds of things.
So what was the reaction when people saw that?
There are lots of solidarity actions, like the medical association from that country, and also got connection with that medic team, and also they keep talking. They continue their advocacy or the advocacy for financial support or advocacy for the cutting the fuels. That kinds of thing. So the efforts continue, I think. So after having the school, after taking responsibility as a lead of a school, so I got a few times for doing the photography. So I need to balance a lot. But I also think that the education is one of the most important things of a revolution, because everything we have been facing rooted from the education. So like the so that's why, like in the past, and so at our school history book, so there was no all historical lesson, history lessons, like the we can say exactly they are all true. No, they are not true. Some are wrong, and also some are already intentionally they put the wrong information. But we all didn't know that. And also the from the education, we all we 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 all reconstruct the things through the education. This is the thing what I believe strongly during this time. And also, the education is the only thing that we can bring the positive impact for sure. Very practical things we can do during this revolution. One of the most practical things we can do in this revolution. So as much as we invest in the education, we will see its impact as later. So if we invest like the 10, so we will receive that impact more than 10 or 10, something like that. So, but if we make that education very, very good way, in very good way.
Where do you get the courage to do everything that you're doing for this revolution?
The courage. No, I never think like myself as a. I am very courageous person than other. I never think like that. So, and also, some people also cheer me like that. Oh, you sacrifice. No. If they cheer me like that, I feel really uncomfortable. No, this is not a sacrifice. Courage. This is not a person who is really courage, not like this. So everybody can do, everybody also doing. So I think it's all about, as I said before, it's all about the personality. So I think everything, who I am now, what I'm doing, is being constructed for several years that I have been through since I was young, since I was born. So everybody has the lifelong journey. So in throughout their life, they have been through several lessons. They already touched several things, several experiences, and also they got the learnings, they got the ideology, they got the philosophy, everything that a person has been through, construct that person, who is that person at the present. So we can't define that person based on one reason or based on one part of his life. So the whole life constructing that person. So I could say it is all about the personality that I have been through my whole life, I think. Like when I was young, so when I talk about personality, you know, that I have been through. So since I was a teenage, like since I was 19, I have been involving a lot in youth things. So when I was young, I was growing up in a small town. At the time, no resources for readings, no books, no library, and also education system was very bad. So I feel like there is nothing I can do. So and also since that time, I moved to Rangoon when I was at the age of 18, 19. So and then in Rangoon, when I arrived to Rangoon, I explored everything. And then later on, I'm involved a lot, so much in youth affairs. I joined with the several youth groups, activist groups, civil society groups. We all initiated the raising the youth voice, youth rights. And then I have been working on that youth issues over like 8 years, 8, 9 years. At the same time, I also working as a trainer, educator at the civil society organization, NGO, and embassy learning center, youth center. And then later on, I stopped. I got really burned out. So I got really drained. And then I stopped all that kinds of doing things. And I went to, I applied scholarship and I studied abroad. And then when I came back, And I invest my life in doing research, traveling and writing. And I got a little bit settled for over 2 years doing in that kinds of work, traveling and writing. But when military coup happened, I could not continue it. Yeah.
Right. A big change like everyone else.
Yeah, sure.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story on here, and really wish you all the safety and good results from what you're doing. It's so powerful to hear these stories and to bring these stories to listeners around the world to know beyond the headlines some of the optimism and the I think reasons for positivity we can look towards the future that you share. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
What a great conversation that was. You know, every so often, listeners share with me how deeply they've connected with a guest they heard on our podcast. Sometimes they share being so profoundly touched by what they've heard, they tell me they just want to reach out and hug the speaker when the episode ends. Hearing this kind of feedback, it's always such a motivation for me, because it shows that even in this virtual space, we've been able to foster a true heart-to-heart connection within this global community. Indeed, many of our guests have made extraordinary personal sacrifices in their efforts to create a better future for their society, and they continue to do so every day, despite the many challenges they face. And so, if you've been touched this way yourself, you might consider supporting the work of one of our guests directly. Such contributions not only provide material help, they also send a powerful message of solidarity and shared humanity. To get involved, send us a message with your intention. Of course, you can also make a general donation at insightmyanmar.org/donation.
Yarananda, 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 Yarananda,